And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we're going to discuss the horrible 2-1 loss performed at Craven Cottage against QPR. This is a match, there's so much to talk about it with what went down at Craven Cottage. David was there, and he's going to break it down for us, but I have my thoughts on it as I watched the replay this morning. If I could feel any worse about a loss, I feel that now after watching the replay, but we'll get into that during this 60-minute episode. Looks like David's on the line with me. I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Sorry, I think Christina hit the phone to stop me coming on, but I found it anyway. Talking about breaking down, I think I'm going to have a breakdown after watching that yesterday, unfortunately. You know, it was, let's say it was frustrating to say the least anyway. It was different to some of the previous matches we've had lately. But still, at the end, came away with a nasty taste in the mouth, unfortunately.
Yeah, David, in the end, it's about the result. Listen, we can talk about the performance. We're going to talk about it. But it's about getting the points. They didn't get the points. There are reasons why I don't feel that they got the points, and we'll go through that. I'm sure you have your reasons, too. But you can play a good match. You can have spells. You can have shots on target, total shots. But if you don't put the ball in the back of the net, David, and the other team puts in two, you're going to lose. And we're going to talk about that.
That's right. That's absolutely the case.
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that Fulham have struggled to score goals. And it was on full display, David. And I'm sure you're going to go into detail about what you watched at Craven Cottage yesterday. All of our fears, all of the issues that we've had watching Fulham at the beginning of the season – were shown to us. You know, again, I watched it on the replay. I listened to it. But for everyone that was there, you saw it. And we're now going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about why we feel they lost this match. Because, listen, it's easy to rant and rave. David, you're upset. I'm upset. But I want to try to figure out exactly what went wrong here. I think we know what went wrong, but we're going to talk about it. That, to me, is more interesting to you know, again, we're both upset, but instead of doing a 60-minute episode of just saying we're upset, let's talk about what went wrong. So, David, I'm going to start with you. Just share with me, overall, what you watched at Craven Cottage yesterday.
Well, the problem we've had this season, as I've said a few times on the show, is we don't have many goals in the team. So the overall fundamental problem is we're not scoring enough goals. So that's obviously number one. Now, there are different reasons for that, and on many occasions this year, unfortunately, we haven't been creating the chances. We've been blocked out, and we haven't had enough chances. But overall, I think in every match we've played, the theme has been for me that we're not converting enough of our chances. Last year, I think we actually were quite ruthless at times. We had chances, and our chances to goals ratio was quite good. This season, it's the opposite. And you know, just looking at the bare stats, I think we had 25 shots, but only six were on target. And one of those would be a penalty that was missed, where the opposition had half as many shots, 13, but had seven on target. So they, we had about a quarter of our shots on target. They had about half their shots on target. So from half as many shots, they had as many shots on target. And then out of that, we converted one out of six. They converted two out of seven. That kind of tells you the sort of the overall picture. Now the problem has been, obviously, there's a two-fold situation. One is, not creating the chances. One is not putting them in when we do get the chances. And I think this year we've seen in every game that our strikers are not converting chances when they get them. But sometimes we're just not creating enough chances, which wasn't the case yesterday. Certainly wasn't the case yesterday. We were pretty dominant. We were definitely dominant yesterday. We were the better team. We did deserve to win the match on play and goal-scoring opportunities. But we failed miserably. And, you don't get a much better chance, really, than a penalty. You really don't. And to miss two of them in one match, it's very rare you see that happen. The last time I remember Fulham doing that was Clifford Carr against Shrewsbury in the 80s. We saw it once in the Premier League year where Van der Sar saved twice against Aston Villa, I believe. I forget his name, Milosevic, I think, was playing for for Villa. But to miss two penalties, it's criminal, and also the other chances we missed as well, of course. Absolutely criminal. But, you know, we lost the game also because of, you know, what I think was a tactical failure yesterday, in the fact that we were dominating the game and our most dominant players were taken off and replaced, and suddenly we were, like, backtracking. We were trying to hold on to the game. Now, I'm not saying we would have won the game, but I think we certainly would have got the draw had it not been for that move. Very strange substitutions yesterday, and I know, you know, we've talked about it offline and off-air, online and off-air, I should say, get it right. But actually, I forgot who it was. So I was going to actually wish you a happy Rosh Hashanah as well, Russ, as well, and all our Jewish listeners. So everything's out of order because I'm all confused and stuff. But yeah, happy Rosh Hashanah, if I said that correctly, to you guys, and to all our Jewish listeners around the world, and happy Sunday to everyone else, I guess, really. I hope you're having a great Sunday. But yeah, no, I mean, we discuss these things, and I'm furious with the manager's tactics. I'm furious with the team's, you know, wastefulness. I really am. You know, the big questions you have to ask is, why did he pick that team? Why did he pick those tactics? Why did he make those substitutions? And also, did he select the penalty takers, or were the penalty takers something that the team decided among themselves? Because in both cases, they were wrong. I mean, the obvious choice for the first penalty has to be Chris Martin. He's someone who takes penalties regularly, I believe. Kearney never taken a penalty for us before, you know. And you know, we've been fairly, like, well off in the last few years with McCormack, and then, of course, you know, before that we've had Berbatov as well.
Danny Murphy.
Very, very clinical. Yeah, and of course, yeah, before that, Danny Murphy. All very clinical penalty takers, really. Only one miss out of all of those, and that was put in on the rebound by Murphy anyway. So, you know, we've been lucky in that respect. But we've missed three penalties this season. That really, like, you know, that really does put the icing on the cake. And for a team that's failing to score goals or failing to create chances, you know, three gilt-edged chances like that, you know, that sums up, you know, reasons why maybe we're out of the cup and maybe why we lost yesterday. Well, certainly why we lost yesterday. I think, you know, the way we were dominant to get the early goal against QPR, you know, from the spot, they could have tumbled again like they've done in previous years, fallen to bits. We could have gone on and maybe got a hatful had we actually hit the target. But the whole match has changed on its head, you know. I have to commend the referee for brave decisions to give penalty for holding at corners. You don't see it all the time. And in the very last minute of injury time, to give a penalty for that. And that some people are moaning about it, but I actually on this occasion agree that it was a penalty. The guy had a high foot, and he took the guy out, or he would have taken him out. And I think that was the right decision. To give a brave decision like that, you know, when a team is losing, to change the result of a match potentially, was a great decision by the referee. And we blew it. We put a guy who can't shoot straight on to take a penalty. What sort of, you know, logic was that? Whose decision was that? Was that the captain on the pitch at the time? Was that, you know, the manager's decision? Did the player just, you know, no one actually wanted to take it, and someone was actually brave enough to say, I'll take it? But we've seen these guys can't hit a barn door with a banjo or a donkey or whatever the expression is. Where's Giannis when you need him? They just can't do it. And it was pathetic. It really was. It was really pathetic. The amount of chances we had yesterday to finish off what was, I think, a poor QPR team. It was a very poor QPR team. And we've made them look good. And you know, worst of all, you know, we've lost faith locally. The one team that we've, you know, had the hex over the last few years, you know, it's been an easy few points for us, really. And we've rolled up and died. And even what's worse as well, I feel what's worse than that, well, almost worse than that, was the crowd. We had more against Bristol City the week before than against one of, you know, our nearest rivals. Now, they didn't bring that many down, but, you know, where was everybody else for a local derby? And it was, you know, an enthralling match, probably. It was an enthralling game of football with lots of mistakes, but also lots of good passing as well. And where was it? 19,000-odd. And we had 20,000-odd against Bristol City. Why? What happened there? So many questions to answer, Russ.
Yeah, you know, David, it's funny. You really got me thinking about everything that you're talking about. And I think this match is about decision-making, and we're going to be talking about a good amount of it while we go through it. That's the way I look at it. I watched back. And, you know, listening to it is one thing, but when you watch it, and obviously being there is a completely different situation. That's why I'm glad that I can do this show with people like yourself, Mike, Emilio, and others that are actually there. It actually really puts everything into perspective because I can only see so much, and I can only listen to so much. So you guys really fill in the gaps for me. That's why you guys are so valuable to this show. But based on what I saw and what I listened to, David, it really comes down to missed opportunities left and right, like you talked about, and decisions made by potentially the players and decisions made by the manager. And we're going to go through that because that, to me, is part of this story as well. We need to talk about those substitutions. Maybe there was an injury concern to one of them, but we're going to talk about that as well because none of us really know the truth on that. But, you know, again, we have to call it like we see it, like it actually played out. We'll talk about that situation with Scott Parker in a bit, David. I definitely want to get into it. I want to spend some time on that. But my opening thoughts is, boy, was this a lost opportunity. They were there for the taking, David. I agree with you 100%. If we score the first, I think we score three or four. I thought they were there for the taking, and that just set the tone early on. Missing that penalty really set the tone. I mean, we were still pressing. We were still more dominant. But it almost got worse from that point on because after we missed it, then we kept missing everything else. You know, we had a golden opportunity with two players, Paezon and Martin, together on the goalkeeper, and they botched that up. And we'll definitely talk about that in a little bit. I mean, there are so many missed opportunities in this match, opportunities in general, that they just missed out on. And when you do that, you leave the open door to a team like QPR. They walk right through it, David. That's exactly what happened. They opened the door to this, and they only have themselves to blame. Everyone deserves some of the blame here, and I'm talking about the players and, of course, the manager. Everyone, when you lose as a team, so that includes everyone. They all have to take this upon themselves and take responsibility for this loss. It was a horrible loss. There's no way to really sugarcoat that. It was a horrible loss. It didn't need to go down this way, but it did. So now let's get into this. Let's talk about it. Before we do get into the particulars, David, I want to share some quotes from the managers and get your thoughts on this because one of them, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink, had something interesting to say about the second penalty. So that's part of the reason why I want to share this with you and get your thoughts on what he had to share after the match. This is actually on the QPR website. These are comments from Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink. This is from the article. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink paid tribute to the traveling QPR fans who cheered the team on to all 3 points at Craven Cottage on Saturday afternoon. Idrissa Cilia scored a late winner after Connor Washington's first half strike was canceled out by Tim Ream. The Irish also saw Fulham miss two penalties, with a second spot kick being awarded in the 95th minute. Sonny Luco's effort from 12 yards cannon off the upright to the delight of the QPR players and supporters. Here are some quotes from Hasselbaink. Quote, I have to give credit to my players for their effort and commitment today. They were very good. The fans were magnificent. There were a lot of them, and it helps the boys. It really does. The fans were immense, and I thank them. It was a very eventful game. It was two teams who were looking to go forward. We knew that their front players would be very dangerous. We had to be brave and play on the front foot, and at times our defenders had to defend. They had a few chances, but must say we created a few chances as well. Then the article goes into talk about the first penalty. I don't know about the first penalty. This is, again, a quote from the Hasselbaink. I haven't seen it yet, but the second one for me is not a penalty. With the first one, certain referees give it and certain referees don't give it. We know the rule, and I'm fine with it, but everyone has to apply it the same way. After Cilia had put Rangers in front with 3 minutes remaining, QPR heart sank when referee Lee Mason pointed to the spot in the 5th minute of injury time when Nedim Anua was penalized for an apparent foul. The second one, I'm in the line of what had happened, and he does not touch him, Hasselbaink said. The player thinks he's going to be touched and goes down, but Nedim doesn't touch him. He doesn't make contact. That is the problem. We knew it was going to be a passionate game. Two local rivals playing each other always makes it a bit more special. It was a brilliant game for the neutral. A lot of things happened, a lot of bad things too, from all three parties, but that happens. I'm happy to come away with all 3 points. All right, David, obviously Hasselbaink is thrilled with the victory. Obviously you can understand that. I want to get your thoughts on what he shared about the second penalty, though. I disagree with him.
I think the best person will probably be on this one, Steve Lydiard, because, of course, he's a ref. But as far as I'm concerned, you don't have to make contact with your foot for it to be, you know, a penalised or, you know, a foul or a penalty for high foot. If someone's foot is up there where you want to put your head in, anywhere else in the pitch, it's a free kick. As long as, you know, if you're going for it with your head and someone's foot is there, whether they make contact or whether you get out of the way, it makes no difference. This was the complaint I had, actually, you know, when we played Leeds away, that when the guy scored with the equaliser with the overhead kick in the last, you know, few minutes, that I think, you know, on that day, Thomas Callas stood off him. And had Thomas Callas gone to try and head the ball while it was kind of in no man's land, I think he would have won the free kick for a high foot. But because he didn't go for it, with his head, he stood back, then, you know, I think it's fair play that people do overhead kicks and scissor kicks and stuff like that. If there's no one's heads nearby, if no one's trying to head the ball, absolutely fine. But on this occasion, it was Sanchez, I think, who was going to head the ball. The foot was high, and the ref, you know, it's a brave decision, but I think he's absolutely right. So you do give a penalty for that. As I say, on anywhere else in the pitch, it's got to be a free kick, and you see them given. You know, had the foot actually made contact with his head, you know, the question has to be asked whether that's actually dangerous play and whether we should be looking at a red card there. Because we saw that once, I remember, in a Fulham match. I think it was at Wigan. I think it was Yakubu actually got sent off, if I'm right, in the Premier League a few years ago, because he had a very high foot. Because, you know, any tackle that's likely to cause danger to the opponent has to be punished with a red card. Dangerous play. You know, or reckless play. So I think, you know, Hasselbaink's talking out of his arse as usual. You know, he's already in enough crap. You know, he's up to his neck in it at the moment, as you know, with all these, you know, allegations and this investigation going on. So I think, you know, he needs to butt out, really, and be glad that, you know, by one means or another, they got the result that day. But it was certainly not deserved, and I can't criticise the referee for his penalties. You know me, I'm no sort of...
You're very critical on the refs, David. So for you to say that means something.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I see people fall over in the box, and you know, I've seen it with Fulham, and I say, no, that's not a penalty, even when Fulham fans are saying the ref was rubbish, we should have had a penalty. You know me, I've said lots of times, no, that wasn't a penalty. But on this occasion, the ref was right. So, you know, Hasselbaink, you know, he's, you know, it's a typical thing that the manager would say. I mean, of course, you know, you're welcome to say I don't think there's a penalty, but I think he's wrong.
I agree with you, David. Obviously, I'm not there. I can't get a really good visual. You're closer than me, but I can see the boot being raised. Well, and exactly what you're talking about. That definitely happened. So very interesting talk about that. All right, David, I know you've already seen this. Let's talk about what Savisa shared after the match. This is on the Fulham website. This is the manager reaction. I'm going to read to it, and then I want your thoughts on what Savisa had to say. Here it is. This is right on the Fulham website. Quote, "It's sensationally strange. We created many things, but we didn't put it in the net. The season we've had three penalties and missed three penalties. I'm sorry, we've had three penalties and missed three penalties. We missed so many chances. We are not clinical, but we have to believe the goals are going to arrive. We still need to be more solid in defense. From two crosses, the second with only one player in the box, QPR scored their goals. We have to avoid that kind of situation. The important thing at the end of the game is the result. Our performance was acceptably good, but it's not enough with any points." And then we go into a little further into the article. So we weren't at a good enough level to win this game. All of us are disappointed on this important day for Fulham Football Club, and it's now in our hands to push harder to improve our level and improve our performance to be more solid. We created many things, but we need to find the end product. In front of us is an important job, and we have to use these days that are in front of us to be more competitive and be a better team. All right, David, those are the quotes from Savisa. What do you make of the quotes? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, obviously, some of it is stating the bleeding obvious, really, about being more clinical in front of goal. That has been, as I said, my open the show with the fact that in every game we haven't been clinical at all. We've, you know, our conversion rate of chances to goals has been very poor. And in most games, against maybe better teams, we haven't even created the chances. At least yesterday, we did create more chances against a poor QPR team, but still, we couldn't put them away when it counted. And there was another bit, I don't think you read it there, but I listened to him saying about basically, he's almost said that, well, I've taken Scott Parker off and the rest of the team should have managed with that. But we, you know, as soon as we took Scott Parker off, we fell to bits, basically. I don't know if you heard that in his video.
Yeah. David, I'm actually going to read that to you when we get to the second half. I want to talk about the Scott Parker situation in a little bit.
Okay, that's fine. But, you know, what he said most is, you know, it was all clear to see. Anyone who saw the match yesterday, and, of course, you've seen the match as well, it's all clear to see that, you know, we've missed, you know, very scoreable chances. We've missed penalties. You know, it's a game we should have won. I mean, the one that we didn't mention as well was the Piazon and Martin one. Piazon should have shot. He was through, but, okay, squaring it to Martin. You know, Martin just fallen over the ball and put it wide. It's just, you know, it's comical. It's sort of like, I'm surprised, you know, the Keystone Cops didn't make a reappearance after 100 years or something. It was just, it was a farce, really, things like that. So, you know, there's nothing unfortunate that Slavica said that placated me, though, or kind of made me think, well, actually, you know, this was a one-off, we were unlucky, these things happen sometimes, because it's not a one-off, we weren't unlucky. You know, it wasn't a decision that went against us or anything like that. It was all in our own hands. It was our own hands. It wasn't bad luck. You know, the keeper didn't make brilliant saves, and the post got in the way, apart from the penalty, obviously, but then, you know, there's no excuse for that. It wasn't bad luck. It's our own wastefulness, unfortunately. That's all you can say to it, really. There's nothing else to say to that, is there?
Yeah. No, there isn't, David. He was basically stating the obvious. And I understand why he said that. And like I mentioned, I know you definitely want to talk about his comments about Scott Parker, and we will discuss that. Trust me, we're going to discuss that in a little bit. But before we do that, before we get to talking about the second half and the first half, I want to get your thoughts. I want to transition and talk about the starting 11. I know you had a problem with one of the selections for the starting 11, but did you have problems with any other? I'm talking about Tim Ream. I know you were hoping that Michael Maddle was going to start. So share with me your overall thoughts on the starting 11.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Michael Maddle's a better defender than Tim Ream, so of course, yes, I expected Michael Maddle to play. The other one that's been, you know, getting on my goat lately is Aluku. And now, it sounds like I'm talking, you know, with hindsight, or, you know, I'm talking after the event, but, you know, I haven't been a fan of Aluku. I know he runs around and, you know, he puts effort in. I think he's a wholehearted player, but the quality with him is poor. I've said before, he's like a headless chicken, and he's not going to get many goals. He can't shoot straight. And I'm afraid yesterday that just kind of summed it up, really. And, you know, he played as an out-and-out striker yesterday. I saw someone else say somewhere in our group or on Twitter that, you know, perhaps it should be Kearney playing in the middle and Aluku playing wide, because Kearney is at least a little bit more consistent in front of goal normally. Aluku isn't, but Aluku does seem to have the ideal physique and, you know, characteristics of a winger, that he's quick. He does get,
right.
You know, when he plays on the left, he can get down the line and put a good cross in. But in the middle, he's wasteful. So, you know, I had an interesting debate with our friend Priestley Spen yesterday, who I think he's a fan of Aluku and told me so. And then after the match, wished he hasn't, because it kind of came back to buy him on the backside, unfortunately. Sorry, Ben, but, you know,
sure.
These things happen sometimes. We all make predictions and then end up with egg
yep.
on our face. Even me, even the great David Hurley, supposedly, sometimes we
wow.
make terrible predictions. You know, it all happens to the best of us sometimes. I think that's fate for you. But, you know, Tim Ream, I don't think he's as good as Michael Maddle. I think Michael Maddle's better. I would rather see Michael Maddle in the team. Aluku, again, I think that we need to be looking at other options. I don't think as a striker he's the right option. If you're going to play him, play him in one of the wider positions, really. But as a central striker, no.
Okay. Now, again, this is hindsight, because listening to the match and then watching it, one of the comments, I believe it was not from Gentleman Jim, but maybe Jamie Reed, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, he was talking about the lack of width without having, say, Cabano or having Aite. And obviously on that side was Piazon. Do you think that maybe this was a match to start Cabano instead of Piazon? I know it's hindsight.
I'm not sure if that's the right answer there, but, you know, because Cabano, if you'd have played him on the left where Piazon started, you would have had the same result. He would have come inside as well. And you could, if you put him on the right and Kearney on the left, that doesn't work really either. So it's not about perhaps the key individuals, but who's playing in what positions. And, you know, why not play a Luku on the left as he is naturally left-footed? And he'll run up and down the line all day. He'll come back and track back, and he'll get down the line and try and put crosses in. You know, why not have him there? Why have Kearney on the right when he's going to drift inside anyway all the time and not going to offer any support for the fullback? So, you know, I don't think that was so much the problem. It was, you know, and Piazon, yeah, I think, you know, he did a reasonable shift where he was, but why not have him in the centre? Why not have him in the number 10 role or behind? I don't know. It's difficult to say, but, you know, Cabano is a right-footed player. You know, perhaps he should be on the right and Kearney should play centrally. Why play Kearney away from the number 10 kind of role where we all feel that he'd probably be best suited? So it's about getting the right people in the right places, I think, more than...
I agree with
perhaps
you, Tim.
Yeah, more than necessarily any one individual. But I think... I don't think Aluka is suited to playing as a striker or just off the striker. He doesn't quite have what it takes for me, because when he does get in front of goal, he's not, you know, his shooting isn't good enough. And then you end up playing people like Piazon maybe in a wide position. You end up playing Kearney in a wide position. And I don't think these are their best places. Certainly Kearney. We've had this debate so many times now.
Oh, totally. Totally. Let's go back to Aluko then, because, you know, amongst us co-hosts, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Aluko. And listen, he deserves criticism because he just can't score. You know, he's getting the opportunities. He just can't score. You just mentioned that you could see him as a winger. Now, I'm asking you, honestly, would you play him on the wing after all of this lately that we've seen? Do you think he could still be a viable option for Slavica as long as he wasn't central?
Well, it depends on, you know, whether we're playing like we did yesterday, which was effectively a 4-4-2, so you do have wide midfielders, or whether we're playing this kind of, you know, this 4-4-5-1, 4-3-3 type scenario where you're going to have the wide midfielders are sort of tucking in more, really. But then, again, you can play a 4-5-1, I guess, with two genuine wingers. But in the way we've been playing recently, we haven't. You know, we've had Kearney on one side and someone like Aiti on the other side, and they've both been coming inside the whole time, and we've had no width. So it just does depend, I suppose, on what, you know, what team or what tactics you want to play exactly. But, yeah, I think if a Luke is going to have any place in the Fulham team, I'd like to see him out wide, because for me, he does the work of a wide player. He'll get up and down. He'll get back and help out, I think. And we've seen, most certainly on his left foot, he put some really good crosses in, you know, several good crosses in. But otherwise, I know his end product is not good enough.
No, it definitely isn't, David. And listen, you know, Aluko was a player that I can see, you know, I think the headless chicken analogy is spot on, David, because he can do a job, but honestly, right now, he needs to be dropped. That's just my opinion. He needs to be dropped because I think Slavica needs to find someone else to do what he's doing right now, and maybe down the road you bring him back in on the wing. But I wouldn't have him behind the striker or part of two. I wouldn't do that. He just can't score. You know, he's not someone you can count on to get the goals on the wing. Possibly. That's why I wanted to bring that up. But you know, again, in this match, boy, it was just not good enough. That's to say it lightly. Okay, all right, David, let's move on to the first half. I just jotted down a couple of key moments, and then now you can just share with me what you saw through your eyes. Of course, in the 6th minute, Fulham rewarded a penalty because Ragnar Sigurdsson was taken down in the box. However, Tom Kearney's penalty is saved by the goalkeeper Smithies for QPR. In the 20th minute, Connor Washington scores, and this is a deflected goal. This was a little bit of luck. It just happened to go in, so, you know, say what you want about that. But they do get the goal. They do go ahead. Now you have a couple of opportunities for Fulham, and there are more. And you can fill in the gaps, David, if I haven't shared the other opportunities. But in the 23rd minute, you have Piazon, who breaks through with Chris Martin on Smithies. He decides to pass it to Martin, who has the shot go wide. It just didn't come off. This was to me, a turning point in the match. This should have been 1-1. That's just my opinion, but it didn't come off that way. Then in the 37th minute, you have Tom Kearney has a chance to score, but his shot just goes wide. There are a few of those during the match. That one stood out for me. All right, David, it's time for your observations of the first half.
Well, I can't say that the award of the penalty was an easy thing for me to see because it was at the far end. So I just give respect to the referee. I know why he gave it, but I couldn't see it at the time myself. So I suppose it was a slight bit of bewilderment that he actually had given it. But it wasn't a good enough penalty. It wasn't, you know, absolutely hit with power. It wasn't absolutely in the corner. It was at a nice height. The keeper went the right way. It went in. And I don't know. I think, you know, with left-footers, they often do seem to go that way with a penalty. I don't know why. It shouldn't be any different to a right-footer. But I think it was just too predictable penalty. I had no confidence when I saw Kearney run up, and you know the keeper guessed right and everything, and that was it. So that was that one, obviously. And you know, as we've talked about before, Piazon and Martin messed up that chance. I think Piazon should have just gone himself. But Martin, I wouldn't even call it a shot. His leg fell over the ball, really. Stumbled over the ball, and it went wide. Very, very disappointing. Of course, the QPR goal, as I said, I was explaining to Emilio yesterday, because someone said, could Button have done better? But I think from what I saw, it took quite a big deflection. And Button probably had it covered, would have saved it. But the ball was actually deflected back opposite to the way which he was diving, and he put a hand up to try and stop it, but he couldn't. So I can't really fault Button for that. It was the deflection just took him out completely. And then there were a couple of similar chances, both for Kearney and also Aluka had a similar one where they both cut in on their left foot and tried to curl it into the far corners. In fact, Aluka's was probably closer than Kearney's, I think, out of the two chances. But, you know, really, first half, although we had more of the possession, I think we were less dominant than we were in the second half because, you know, QPR did have several chances on goal, albeit mostly, you know, from distance or whatever, tame shots, apart from the one they scored. But it was, you know, Button did have to make several fairly comfortable saves in the first half. But second half was definitely more one-way traffic, as we'll talk about in a minute.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, David, it's time to move now to the second half. And listen, it started bright, obviously, in the 48th minute, Tim Ream scores, but this goal started from play off of a corner, and then I believe it actually a good opportunity from Scott Parker hit the crossbar, eventually got Tim Ream, and he scored. So I want to kind of do this piece by piece, David. So we're going to do the second half a little bit differently. I just want to get your thoughts first on that goal.
Well, it was, to be honest with you, we had a succession of poor corners. Piazon took most of them, and I think he'd been taking lessons from Brian Ruiz because he was struggling to beat the first man at the near post every time. And on this occasion, the corner came back out and it was fed to Parker. And he's whipped in like a little shot come cross, really. More of a cross than a shot. I think he's actually, I'm not sure he hit the bar. I think the keeper actually flapped it out a bit. It was a bit of a poor clearance by the keeper and it fell to Ream in the right place. He's done what you have to do. He's hit it low and hard and it's gone in off a defender on the line, I believe. And, you know, you could see the delight to Ream. You know, and I'm really pleased for him because, you know, I'm not his biggest fan. And, you know, yesterday, I don't know, there were some ropey moments from him, but other times you can see that he's got a good footballing brain and that, you know, as a passing central defender, he streaks ahead of, like, Sigurdsson. Sigurdsson's gives me, like, kittens every time he tries to get the ball out of defence. His passing is awful, puts us in trouble sometimes, whereas Ream is very composed. And he's got, you know, a good footballing brain. It's just that, in the air a few times, especially first half, you watch the match. He's let the ball come over his head. You know, he hasn't attacked the ball. He's misjudged the ball. The defender's got him behind him. Defensively, he's just not good enough for me, I'm afraid. But on the floor, you know, he's a very assured player. You know, he's got a good footballing brain. He passes the ball quite nicely. But he's in the team, obviously, to defend, and that's where my issue with him is. But he's got the goal. He's obviously pleased with it. Everyone else was very pleased with it, and, you know, he got us back in the match. So it was a good start to the second half.
It was, David. It was. And you know, again, Fulham were on the front foot. They were pushing for that go-ahead goal. And then came the substitution, and I want to get your thoughts on the 56th minute that I personally disagree with. Matt Smith comes on for Chris Martin, so it is almost like-for-like, but they do offer a little bit different kind of striker. So I want to get your thoughts on this, because I was surprised that he took off Chris Martin. Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, we're all completely mystified as well, because at that point, you know, we were doing really well. We were quite dominant, and there wasn't really any reason to change it, not at all. I mean, we were doing pretty well. Why change it at that point? I don't know why. And so I agree with you. You know, I think it was totally and utterly needless substitution. It was just a change for no reason. And Martin was coming into the game more. As I say, we were having good spells of pressure. It wasn't as if we were chasing the game at that point. We had plenty of time still to fathom out, you know, how to get a winner or something. So it was a bewildering move to take Martin off so early in the match.
I agree, David. I agree. Okay, so he comes off, and Fulham's still really on the front foot, and I'm going to mention a couple of situations that came up and then get your overall thoughts on what I'm about to share. You have in the 57th minute, right afterwards, Scott Parker's shot is cleared off the line by Stephen Cocker. Boy, this is another opportunity, but you have to give credit for Cocker for clearing it. And then in the 64th minute, Luko has a chance to score, but his header just goes wide. Then you have... in the 70th minute, David, you have Cabano comes on for Tom Kearney. Then another golden opportunity in the 74th minute. Cabano's header just goes wide. This needs to be on target. In my opinion, I know he's a new player, but Niskanen Cabano needs to get this on target, but it goes wide. Talk about all these situations, including the substitution, David.
Well, the only positive point, really, for me of the substitution was that Matt Smith nearly had an immediate effect, nearly. We had a good breakaway attack. Aluka went down the left, and this is why, you know, where he is useful. He's looked up, he saw that that Matt Smith at the back post. He's putting a great cross right to Matt Smith. Matt Smith, knowing from his position, he's at a tight angle, he wasn't in the best place to have a direct header. And he's put it right back into Scott Parker's path, you know, excellent move. Parker in the right place, hit it really well. It's been cleared off the line. I mean, the keeper was completely beaten. It was a great move by Fulham. You know, that was a little bit unlucky, you have to say, because we did everything right there. But really, after that, it was all down to Fulham. It was a slightly strange thing to see Kearney taken off, because Kearney had been having, you know, quite a good effect on the match. My only complaint about Kearney was a couple of times he had through balls, and he just didn't have the legs quite to get on them or to run and beat his man with them. But Kearney was, you know, he was an integral part now, however, the team, and we were doing well. So it was a bit strange that he went off, and perhaps not somebody else. You could have expected, you know, even Aluka to go off, or even Piazon. But that was a little bit strange to see Cabano come on as well. I'm not sure what it, you know, apart from perhaps giving us a bit more natural width on the right, didn't really add much for me. Then of course we had the Aluka chance. He dragged it with his left foot. He sort of scuffed it. With his right foot, I beg your pardon, this one, wasn't it? He was at the far post, and he's like mishit it on his right foot, put it wide, sliced it wide, which is, you know, in a good position. You've got to be hitting the target there, if nothing else. Of course, the Cabano chance was much worse. It was, I think, Parker played in a great little ball to Scott Malone, who's got in behind, and he's pulled it back to the far post. On a plate for Cabano, he's got to bury that. Absolutely got to bury it from there. It was a terrible, terrible miss, you know. Absolutely awful miss. But, you know, we were creating the chances. We were putting ourselves in dangerous situations and things. And, you know, we only have ourselves to blame.
Definitely, David. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think I might have a Goldman here. I think I said a header by Luka, but I think you're right about that. So there's a Goldman for you. I probably have already had two or three, so... I'm happy to admit when I have a mistake, and we always call that a Goldman. Even your mistakes, Dave, we call Goldmans. Everyone's mistakes are a Goldman. Anyways, okay, now we're going to talk about a critical point in this match. We have to talk about this, David. Scott Parker is taken off in the 77th minute for Yothabed. And before this, a few minutes before, Scott Parker looked like he might have gotten hurt, took a knock, came off, then came back on. And I, you know, again, I'm not there, you're there. It looked like he was running okay, but again, this is just what I'm seeing. So then we have this decision. The question is that we don't have the answer for. Was this tactical? Was it injury-related that he made this decision? This is what we don't know. But I want to get your thoughts on this as a decision. Did it work or did it not work? I think it caused a major problem. I'm talking about the result was that it didn't work, but I want to get your thoughts on it.
Well, it was a complete and utter disaster. It really was. I mean, this was, you know, one of the most brainless moves I've ever seen. Parker did take a knock, and he did actually briefly receive treatment, but he was back on. He seemed to be running absolutely fine, and he was dominating the show. You've seen the whole replay now. I told you this yesterday, he was dominating the show. And,
Scott,
you know,
Parker,
I know,
was
you
excellent
like
in this match, David. Scott Parker,
yeah,
was excellent.
I know
excellent.
You like to disagree with me, Russ, sometimes, but there's no way you can disagree
with me.
No,
I have to agree
with
you
that.
Here. I have to agree with you about Scott Parker's play. Yeah.
And he was actually one of our most attacking midfielders in some ways. He was actually driving us forward all the time. He was the one getting to the edge of the box, you know, taking shots or playing good little passes through and everything. He was taking the game to them. But he was, you know, he looked like a young man on the pitch. He was like half a yard quicker than everyone. He was getting, you know, his prediction of where the ball was going to be was excellent. He was getting in. He was getting stuck in. He was putting his body on the line. He wasn't playing like someone who's on his last payday before retirement. You know, he looked like someone who's playing to sign a new contract to get, you know, for the next 3 years. He really was. And then to take him off, we just handed the game on the plate to them. I don't care whether he was injured or not. In this case, it had no effect on the game. His play was excellent. And, you know, with an international break coming up, he had a slight knock. So what? You know, there was nothing that was bad enough that he needed to be withdrawn at that point. It changed the whole dynamic of the game. You took him off and replaced him with someone like, you know, like Yozabed, who's not a tackling midfielder like that. He's there as a flair player more. You know, it's fine. There was Tunnicliffe was beside him, but Tunnicliffe was, you know, he was almost anonymous second half, really. First half, I think he did well. The second half, he had to take second stage to Parker. If you wanted to bring on Yozabed, I would have brought on Tunnicliffe, taken him off. If you wanted to be more attacking, it was a bewildering situation. You know, I said at the time, I tweeted at the time, why on earth is he taking him off? And, you know, I'm afraid it was David Halley right again, because as soon as we took him off, you know, I'm sorry to say, I don't want to, like, sound big-headed about this, but the whole dynamic changed. We just handed them the
no, David,
the possession.
You are right about the result. You're talking about what happened when he was taken off. This part, I think you're 100% right on. The fact that he takes off Scott Parker, and immediately, because I'm watching, right after he came off, they were on the front foot immediately. And the goal was coming. The goal was that I could feel the goal coming. So either they were instructed to go after Yozabed or to press forward because Park was out. I don't know, but they had it in their mind that they were going to attack, and they were able to attack. And, you know, the decision to bring him on, we could talk about that. And I'm going to share now the quote from Slavica because, again, back and forth, I don't know if he's injured. I hear what you're saying. But to be fair, we don't know. We don't know. And just so you know, there's been a good amount of talk amongst us co-hosts about this. Well, maybe he was injured, David. So I understand where these co-hosts are coming from. But I'm going to read this quote from Slavica, from his presser that I wrote down. And I want to get your thoughts on this. These are the words of Slavica Jokanović. Quote, if I change Scott Parker, this is like end of the world and nobody is able to cover this position. This is simple. It is not acceptable. We need to show more correctable quality and more personality. All right, David, that's what he said about, you know, again, he doesn't go into detail of why he had Parker came off. He was just talking about the response to him taking off of Parker. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, he's basically trying to deflect the way, the attention, the fact that he's screwed up. You know, he knows that the whole match has been thrown by taking Parker off, but he's trying to deflect away by saying, well, actually, you know, we shouldn't lose because I took Parker off. We should be able to manage without Parker being on the pitch. And to a point, he's right. I mean, you know, no team is bigger than one player. You know, Parker's not going to go on forever. You know, he's 35, 36 already. You know, his days are numbered, and we need to look for life after Parker. But he's pointing to the fact like that. We should be able to manage without Parker or anyone. And that's right to a point. But
he is right about that.
Yesterday, it was a wrong move. And he must realise that's wrong, and he's made an almighty screw-up. He hasn't even said about him being injured. He hasn't even tried to justify that by saying, well, actually, Parker was injured and we didn't want to risk him. He hasn't said that. He's just I don't know, for whatever reason, he's decided to take him off. And he's thought that, you know, by taking our best player off yesterday, that it's not going to have a bearing on the match. The one person who was determined to win every ball and, you know, to drive us forward. And in a match where we need to beat our bitter rivals, you know, from down the road, who, and we've been dominant over them. The whole thing stinks, it really does. He knows he screwed up by saying that. I'm certain he knows he screwed up. But he's right in the fact that, you know, we should be able to manage without any one player. That's absolutely
true. He is right
about that. We should be able to.
Yeah.
But the person he brought on was not a like-for-like replacement. And it wasn't a match where this sort of change was needed. It was a match where, you know, if Scott Parker had to come off for some reason, then you know, we needed
a Scott Parker type
player. But, you know, how long was
on the bench,
Ruff?
Who would you have brought in if you had to make that decision? Let's say he really was injured. Let's just go with that. He brings on Yothabed. It was basically a different type of player. With the players available, who would you have brought on?
Well, there wasn't, was there, I don't think. I mean, you'd be looking for someone who can play in that
Well,
sort
possibly,
of, you know,
possibly you could have put on Dennis Adeniran. I mean, he does play defensive midfield, so you could have brought him on, but that's a young kid.
I haven't seen him play. It's really hard for me to say on that one. I mean, out of the more senior players, you'd be looking at, I suppose you'd be looking at someone like Johansson or something, perhaps, who is
He wasn't even available.
He wasn't, you know.
Yeah, no.
And LVC wasn't. LVC has just disappeared off the radar as well, which is a big shame. But, you know, it was a screw-up. I mean, have you seen anything that said Parker was injured? It's just an implication, isn't it?
I have not seen anything, David. I've actually been looking. I haven't seen anything that he's been injured. Listen, we're all talking about it because we saw him have that knock. We saw it. And then we saw him go off. We saw him come back on. And we're, you know, and I remember Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reed talking about that once he was receiving treatment, I believe they then started talking about that they saw that Yothabed looked like he might be coming on. This is initially. And then Parker goes back on for a few minutes, and then they made the decision to take him off. So it's a curious one, but to answer your question, David, I've not seen anything that says he was injured and was not able to continue. I've not seen that.
No, and you've seen him play. He came back on, and he was just the same as he was before. He wasn't hobbling around. There was no sign of any distress from him. And how many minutes were left? There weren't very many minutes left anyway. I mean, it was an almighty screw-up.
I know, David, but...
Almighty screw-up.
I understand.
It has to be. Huh?
No.
Sorry?
No, it's a screw-up, David. But to be fair, I actually had someone message me that told me that Parker looked like he was dead on his feet. And I don't know. I'm not there. So I can't really view that. But if you're asking me if I, you know... If I saw anything that he was injured, I've not seen anything on social media that has said that. So it's
I did see Mike say that, but I don't agree with Mike on this occasion. You saw the game, you seen Parker. Did he look dead on his feet to you from what you saw?
From what I saw, no. But you know, again, that's from what I saw. But I'm not getting a real true view like you guys are. So yes, if you're asking me from what I saw watching a replay, and I was watching him, he looked like he could still play, but that's just my feeling. But I understand Mike's watching him very carefully, and yes, it was our co-host, Mr. Mike Crick, that actually messaged me just to let me know that hey, you know, I thought he was dead on his feet. So, and I respect Mike's view, and I respect yours as well, David.
No, I do. I respect Mike very much, but I don't agree on this occasion. I saw Parker, and he was, you know, he was an 18-year-old playing for a new contract extension for me. He was, like, all over the shop. He really was. He was, you know, covering every blade of grass. He was driving his own. He was magnificent yesterday. He really was. And to take him off, it was just, it was a big slap in the face for the team. The team couldn't cope with it. You know, Brentford, they lapped it up, and I think I retweeted a Brentford fan and said, you know, Djokovic cost Fulham a match by taking off their two most influential players, their two best midfielders, something like that. And he's obviously referring to Parker and Kearney.
Right.
Kearney, I can understand Kenny, maybe more so. I can understand that if he wants to put on someone with genuine wit, but I think I would have taken other people off before I took Kenny off. So, you know, I don't agree with what Jokanovic did. Not in the slightest. And I think that, you know, he has to look at himself wholly for the blame of why we lost the match. Maybe not why we, you know, why we didn't win the match, because I don't know how much influence he had over who took the penalties. I really don't, whether that was something that was down to him or down to the players. So you can't say that Aluku missing the penalty was Jokanovic's fault, although I would say that Aluku shouldn't have been in the team. So, but definitely Scott Parker was a big, big, big mess up.
Okay, David. And listen, as we're talking about the result of how the match ended, I do agree with that. You know, if we take out was he or was he not injured out of it and we're just talking about how it ended up, you're right. You are right, because I think that was a situation where it got us unstable, David. And, you know, and that leads to, you know, that leads to the goal by QPR in the 87th minute. It was scored from a header by Idrissa Cilia. He got the match winner here, David. And then shortly after that, in the 90th minute, you have Yothabed hits the bar on a free kick. Good opportunity here, unfortunately. Hits the bar. And then in the fourth minute of stoppage time, you have a second penalty awarded to Fulham. I agree with you, Dave. We already talked about this. It should have been awarded. I totally agree with you. Unfortunately, Sonia Luko misses it, and that's how the match ended. So, David, let's talk about the end of the match. Get your thoughts quickly. We only have about 8 minutes left.
Well, unfortunately, the Brentford goal was due to a mistake by Yossabed. We were clearing the ball out of defense.
You mean QPR, David, QPR.
Yeah.
That's a Goldman.
Oh, you know, it's a Goldman anyway. I can make Goldmans because you get the blame for them even if it's my fault, yeah? But it was, yeah, Tanakiff was looking to clear the ball forward, but somehow Yossabed got in the way and tried to clear backwards and just ended up giving the possession away. They put it wide. Guy put a cross in. Tim Ream was nowhere near. His man who was completely unmarked at the far post, and Sigurdsson likewise nowhere near. But Tim Ream seemed to be the nearest man there. Guy had a free sort of header at the far post, and he actually knew where the goal was for a change, because they'd missed a similar one as well before that, a little bit, you know, like the Cabano miss. So of course then we were losing. Obviously, we had the free kick on the edge of the box, you know, nicely taken by, you know, by Jose, but I have to say, but you know, hit the bar and the top of the bar as well, to be honest, so it needed to be a little bit lower. And then of course, you know, the penalty which I've already talked about, which I think was, you know, a good brave decision by the referee to give it. You see them given all over the pitch, but you don't always see them given in the box, but he gave it. But a totally unconvincing penalty by Luka, you know, just a complete scuff, hit the post. And he was devastated. I do feel sorry for him because, you know, after whatever else has happened, he has at least had the bravery to take it. So you give him credit for that, I suppose. But he shouldn't be the one in that situation. We need someone who's a much better striker of the ball than that. You know, I think, yeah, someone said, I think it was Steve Lidd, said maybe you should have even like Sigurdsson or someone just to put his laces through the ball. Anyone at that stage of the match. Keeper's going to probably dive, bang it down the middle if you really have to, you know, hit it hard down the middle. And don't miss the target altogether like that. And then after that, final whistle went, booze all around, unfortunately, and I can understand why.
Yeah, no, I can as well, David. It was a horrible way to end this match, and oh boy, what a kick in the teeth. What a way to go into the international break. Everything that could go wrong went wrong here, David. And we could talk about, you know, the performance, you know, again, being a decent performance. But in the end, David, all that it really matters, I mean, we're talking about breaking it down, but in the end, it's about the table. The table doesn't lie, David. While QPR are ahead of us in the table, we are now, you know, where we are, and that's not good enough. It needs to be better. And this match could have changed a great deal if they won it. If they won it, we would have been on Mike's path for points. It would have been a good situation. Now we're really behind the eight ball, and he has a lot of work to do. I'm talking about the coach and the players also. A lot of work to do until the next match during this international break. They do, because they have to figure out and fix what's going wrong. And it's right now, it's about scoring goals. It really is about scoring goals. That is the major problem, my friend. All right, we only have a little under 5 minutes. We're going to have to do this real quick. I'm going to give you the full-time stats. Okay, possession, 53% to 47% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, 25 to 14 in favor of Fulham. Shots on target, 7 to 6 in favor of QPR. Crosses, 31 to 28 in favor of QPR. Tackles, 16 to 13 in favor of Fulham. Attempted passes, 437 to 379 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, 197 to 153 in favor of QPR. Passing accuracy, in favor of QPR, 78% to 76%. Accurate passes, 334 to 297 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, 31 to 16 in favor of QPR. And fouls were 11 to 6 in favor of QPR. All right, David, like I said, we don't have that much time left. What do you make of the full-time stats?
Well, you know, I think that the key stats I've already discussed, the fact that we had twice as many shots as QPR, but actually, in fact, one less on target than they did. And out of that, they scored twice and we only scored once. They are really the only stats you need to know. Possession was fairly equal. It was a fairly end-to-end match, especially in the first half. We had far more corners, though. That's because we got in far more attacking dangerous positions, I think, than QPR did, especially second half. But again, only one stat counts. 2-1, that's all that counts.
Yep, absolutely, David. All right, let's go to your man of the match. Who's your man of the match?
Well, I think this will surprise everyone who's listening. Not Scott Parker by miles. Scott Parker.
I agree with you.
I was quite impressed with Tanakis in the first half. I think he faded. Piazon, likewise, I think he faded second half. But Parker, he just got better and better as the game went on. And, you know, he was the real man driving us forward. And to take him off, it was absolutely criminal. Whether it was injured, whether it wasn't, whether he just, you know, whatever it was criminal to take him off, and that cost us.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, let's rate Slavisa. I'm looking forward to this from you. What are you going to give him, David?
You know what I'm going to give him, Russ, because I told you yesterday.
Would that be zero?
Yeah, get quacker thing out. You know, those duck things, yeah?
You know,
blow your duck hooter thing, and, yeah, it's a big fat zero. I'm afraid
Okay. Taking
Chris Martin off was, you know, for Smith at quite an early stage, you know, was head-scratching. Kearney to come off when he was doing quite well for, you know, when perhaps others should have gone, maybe Piazza should have gone, who'd faded second half, a bit strange. But taking off Scott Parker and handing them the game on the plate, an absolute disgrace. Now, you pick the team, mate. You know, you pick these players. They're your players who can't hit the target, who aren't good at shooting, aren't good at scoring goals. They're your players. It's your team. It's your tactics. You've got to take the blame, and that substitution. Penalties, we don't know. But I suggest that he's probably selected the penalty takers as well. So big fat zero, Slavisa. You've completely screwed up, I'm afraid. You need to do much, much better than that.
Okay, very good. All right. All right, David, listen, I feel sorry here. I was hoping to have some time for you to rate the players. I know how much you enjoy rating the players. We just don't have the time. I was going to try to squeeze that in for 5 minutes, but I did not really time this out correctly, so I apologize, my friend.
No, it's me for ranting on at the start probably as well. So I've been less ranty than I thought I would be. I've been much more balanced before anyone says it's a biased show. I think I've been fairly balanced as best I can.
I want to say, David, I think you have. You know, you still voiced your opinion. But what I wanted to do in this show was not just to rant. I wanted to have a show where we really talked about everything that went on. And I think you did a very nice job of doing that. So thank you very much, my friend. You know, I always feel a little bit better after doing it. I don't feel great about the result. Obviously, it's a horrible result. But I do enjoy doing this show with you. But it is time to go. For David Hulley, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, David, and thank you again.
Thanks, Russ. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Boys.